You are listening to the Frilla Bros Tech Podcast, episode 91, Bad Ideas.
Episode 91 of the Frilla Bros Tech Podcast. Today is June the 23rd, 2013. I am the echoey Matthew Dean Furlow, and this is my super brother, James Furlow.
Yeah, dude, I finally saw the movie. It is awesome. Bought the soundtrack. I've been listening to it, and I almost went again to see it this afternoon.
But
I was a little slow on pulling the trigger. Because I didn't look to see what movie times were until it was like, oh, it's starting right now. Never mind.
So you were a fan of The Man of Steel.
I was. Okay, spoiler alert. Fast forward like 5 minutes if you don't want to hear about it. The complaint in the previous Superman Returns, or just on it, you know, it was like not enough action. You know, it was just really slow.
Right.
So they solved that problem with this one.
Mm-hmm.
I also feel like it could have easily been two or three movies. And, you know, so there were, I'll admit it, there were definitely some rushed parts about it. But, you know, I know the character, so it's not like what was his development? You know, I know.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's okay. You don't have to love it.
I was kind of disappointed, and mostly because the characters were so incredibly linear, and the story was so incredibly linear, and there was like no character development or character arc. Lois Lane.
You could tell that they tried, but
there was so much that they had to do, and the only super creative thing that they did with this movie was they rearrange the order in which the major villain comes. So instead of Lex being the first villain, it was Zod. Like that was it. I don't know. I guess I was really hoping for something more. And you can tell that like in the end the studios were like, no, it's gotta be Superman, it's gotta be vanilla Superman with darker colors and more action. That's it.
Well, again, my hope is, and this is why I'm going to tell everyone to go watch it, is that it is actually successful and that they do like a Batman thing where it's like, yeah, well, this was the Superman Begins, whatever. Yeah, it's not as good as Batman Begins, whatever.
Which, I'll be honest,
sets them up for like, okay, he's here, everyone's established, we tease the whole Lex Luthor, you know, strong businessman, you know, evil villain thing. Let's let that and the mind games play out on that one and go with the character then.
You know, that's
who is
true.
Clark Kent, how does he balance all of this?
Yeah, that's true. And to be totally honest, the first time I saw Batman Begins, I thought it was a really stupid movie. And then I watched it again, and I thought it was a really dumb movie. Then I watched it again, and I thought it was a dumb movie. And then I watched it again, and I thought it was an alright movie. And now I watch it all the time because I think it's a great movie. So sometimes I take a little bit longer to warm up to movies, these types of movies, than most people. Well, what do you mean?
I was like that with Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah.
The first time I saw that, I was like, this is the stupidest movie ever. Why would anyone? Why? I don't get it. And then I watched it a second time and went, okay, I get it.
Yeah. That was closely related to my experience with Zoolander. I thought it was a stupid movie. And then like 3 weeks later, I found myself still constantly quoting it. I was like, maybe it wasn't a terrible movie.
That is a quotable movie.
Oh, man, it really is. Wow, what the heck? What's going on with Superman? Domestic or foreign, it's only pulled in $73 million. Weird. Wonder why that is. Maybe they haven't done a wide release internationally. Because, I mean, like, what?
That would be kind of weird, given all the advertising they did. But
I know. Yeah. Well, because if you look at Iron Man 3, I think it's all can just Google this stuff now, or Google it basically, and it comes up. Iron Man 3 has pulled in $804 million foreignly and $403 million domestically. So, I mean, it's pulled in, most of its money's coming from foreign areas. And so it's pulled in $1.2 billion and was an estimated production budget of $200 million. What the heck?
That's a pretty good return.
Yeah, no wonder they're going to make another one. But don't worry, Iron Man will be back. Yeah, I believe it. So anyways,
congratulations for coming out of the closet, by the way. Or let's just say the storage room, perhaps. I've been working on that one all week.
You know what? I'm proud of you for holding on to that one, because I didn't see that coming at all. That was good. Yes, I am. If you can tell by the echo, I'm in a new room. It has a table, a computer, a giant 27-inch screen, some speakers, keyboard, mouse, and nothing else.
Internet, you're good.
Internet. It's all literally all I need. Don't have a bed. I don't actually know what my plan is for sleeping tonight.
Wait, so you're sleeping on the floor? You don't even have a mattress?
Yeah. I got blankets. It's pretty close, right? You know,
you're good. You know, there was a long time where I didn't sleep on a bed either. I had one. It was in my room. I just didn't go into my room.
That's what I keep telling everybody. I'm going all Steve Jobs on this thing, man. I'm waiting until I figure out exactly what I want before I commit to anything. this is my plan. People may keep making fun of me for it. But anyway, so we're not here to talk about Iron Man and my living situation all week. We are here to talk about technology, the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure he's got to throw our way. Ironically, he'll do it this week and not last week.
I got it in there eventually. I work for HP, but I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Nice. That is true. That is as true last week as it was last week.
Hopefully for many weeks to come.
It's true. So if you want to follow us on throughout the week, all sorts of our cool pictures and funny stuff, you can go our main hub of internet, of our internet personalities, I suppose, is probably the Twitter. At least for me, that's true. Everything kind of flows through that. First and foremost, my Twitter handle is at Matthew D. Furlow.
And I am at James Furlow. And again, I am experimenting with a Tumblr blog, jamesfurlow.tumblr.com, on like posting articles and thoughts there.
Nice.
Which I don't have copied over to Twitter or something. I don't know. I haven't figured out how to do all that yet.
Yeah. So
Let me rephrase it. I know how to do it. I just haven't figured out like the directions I want information to flow. I just want to clarify.
Right. And more and more of you are...
If this, then that is an awesome tool.
It really is. If you don't know what if this, then that is, Google it, because it's not just a logic structure in programming. It's an awesome service that allows you to do all sorts of crazy, wacky stuff. It's really powerful. I don't use it enough, to be honest. But what I was going to say is also more and more of you are finding me for sure. I don't know if they're finding you on the Instagram, but feel free to check that out and see all the photographias and Facebook. I'll probably say yes unless you're like obviously a fake profile trying to get me to watch your videos, which I've been getting more of those lately. And as I think I've mentioned before. But, yeah, so check out our social network. And it's more than just tech. It's our whole lives, man. It's partying and fun and commentary and general thoughts. And mostly, I would say probably the one thing that it really is kind of an exception for me is that I don't talk politics online because for whatever reason, man, that's a terrible idea. Talk about anything else, not politics. But anyways, so that's the deal. Yo.
Cool.
So
I'll kick this off with let's see here. We've got 7 days left. January, February, March, April, May.
Oh, no. Oh, shoot. I forgot.
We have T-minus 7 days until the good old Google Reader is no more. So, what are you doing with your feeds? I might have an answer.
I don't know.
I got an answer. You're going to do two things. Number one, export it to, like, document is and just, like, hold on to that for dear sake. It may even make sense if you can somehow get it in, like, a CSV for, Excel, where you can have, like, the name of the feed and then the feed itself. Maybe even another one where you have it in categories. I don't know. That's kind of my intention, is to do at least those things.
Yeah.
And then while you're at it, move all your feeds over to Feedly. They appear to be the current winner, leading runner thing. Because what they've done is created Feedly Cloud. Essentially, they figured out, finally, how to host it all themselves, because they used to be dependent on Google Reader, and they were just, another layer on top of that. And Feedly Cloud, which means two things. Number one, which I think is cool, is you can just visit their website and read your feeds. You don't need a special plugin anymore in order to use it, which is really nice. And number two, they have an API that other services can hook into. And, and so pretty much be exactly what it used to be for, these other services. Right. So far they've integrated one of which that I use, which is Reader on my Mac. And then I'm hoping Flipboard gets on board with them. But I think they're the ones. And their iPhone app isn't bad. Actually, I've been using it the last couple days, just kind of, get another feel for it. And it's different, obviously, but it works. So I think those are the guys who are going to win. They got a lot of momentum and they're doing a good job writing it. I know that Dig is like, oh, we're coming out with something, but it's like, dude,
yeah, it's too late, man.
People are already migrating and they're not going to take a risk of their feeds as unproven. No way. I might do both, right? I'll sign up for this. I'll probably sign up for Dig. I'll try a couple of the others out, but if I had to guess, they're getting it. I don't know how they're going to make any money, but they're the ones.
Yeah. This is important to me because when it comes to getting news and stuff, I'm no longer allowed to use Reddit at work. My boss doesn't actually know what Reddit is. All he knows is that our internet was going really slow, and when he talked to the dude that does all of our internet and they kind of observed where all of our traffic was going, the two biggest draws of our bandwidth for our entire company was Pandora and Reddit. So he assumes that Reddit is some sort of a streaming service, because evidently I was pulling as much bandwidth using Reddit just at work as I was listening to music on Pandora. So he was like, yeah, don't do that anymore. I'm like, okay. Don't figure out what it is, because that'll indicate how much time I spend on it some days. So, yeah. Which means I'm completely cut off from the Reddit stream of news, so I'm going to have to go back to I'm going to have to get my news from other sources. And
you figure it out. You get a balance there.
Yeah. Well, actually, the easiest solution is just to turn on my turn off Wi-Fi on my phone, and which I will do. Already am doing. I have the attention span of a gnat. That's the real problem. I just have such a short attention span that it's like I can work really good for about 15 minutes, then I need about 15 minutes of distraction and do as much work as the other engineers do in 15 minutes as they do in 3 hours. So it's like, it's not too bad, but
I was reading this cool article on Lifehacker. This is off subject, but it's Lifehacker and it's awesome. So we'll share this. This light is just, I look a little better. Article on Lifehacker that was talking about how, you know, where did the 8-hour workday come from and what's the purpose behind it. And what was super fascinating is it had to do with the Industrial Revolution and, you know, trying to get the machine 24/7 because that was the most profitable that they could be. And for a really long time, it was they were like 10 or 12 hour shifts was the idea that they had. And this you know, workforce guru dude wrote a paper that was like, actually the 8-hour workday would be perfect for factories because you have 8 hours of work, 8 hours of, you know, play, and then 8 hours of sleep. And you just do three shifts and, you know, all the numbers work out. And, and he wrote that a while ago. A few years later, Henry Ford was actually the first one to implement it. And get this, he cut everyone's hours in half and paid them twice as much. Or, you know, or he cut them by 2 hours. I'm sorry, not by half. So, you know, instead of getting paid like $10 an hour, it wasn't this, you know, it's probably 10 cents an hour for, you know, to work 10 hours during the day. He said, well, you're only going to work 8 hours, but I'm going to pay you 20 cents an hour.
Oh, man.
So significant.
I can say, so what you're saying is I'm going to get a raise and have to work less? Deal.
Yeah. And they were already like massively profitable. And they said that because of that, they increased employee productivity and happiness and actually over doubled in profitability in like a year. It was one of those, so it's kind of like you go, okay, employees are here and we're profitable. Okay. You know, that's hard to do that. And so obviously everyone else was like, okay, we're switching.
Right.
And so that was how the 8-hour workday evolved. And if you worked in a factory, it still made sense. And they were talking about how we are now in a more service oriented economy. And I would argue that you and I are in the service type of stuff where not working on a factory, I'm doing knowledge worker. Maybe no more knowledge worker is the right term.
Right.
And so they said it's time to think less about the machine cycles and the factory cycle and more like what are our, you know, and attention and those kind of cycles. And so what they found was that human beings can really focus well for like 60 to 90 minutes. And so you are good. And then it's like you very quickly go down the hill, and even if you want to extra time, they're like, you're actually better off the 20-minute to half-hour break and, like, do nothing, either or go play, you know what I mean? Just, like, literally don't do work anymore, and then come back. And so that what they were saying was to figure out, so instead of thinking of your day in terms of an 8-hour marathon, think of it in terms of 90-minute chunk. Set it up where you go, okay, what are the five projects that I can do in about 90, you know, 60 to 90 minutes today? And then just do those. And then once you finish that, you take a break and, you know, and don't worry about it. So they're like, yeah, technically, you might work less hours, but you're going to be more productive and you'll be happier. And
it's amazing how there are some tasks that or most tasks, most work that I do, that's absolutely true. I can go about 60 minutes. And then there are some tasks where it's like, I feel like I can just go for like 5 hours. Like, especially when I get into a writing mood, I can just go nonstop. But I've always wondered if it's just a feeling that I can go nonstop. And I wish that there was a way that wasn't, I mean, I'm not enough of a computational, you know, statistics guy to actually do this, but I wish I could actually look at the writing that I do, keep track of like how big a chunk of time that I do it in, and compare that to the quality of the writing. Because I've always theorized, like, I can write 10, 15 pages in a 5-hour chunk and just like do it, just like mind pour out and just do a ton of work of writing, but my fear has always been that although I was very productive, that was actually the least interesting chunk of writing that I did. Whereas it was the stuff there I only really got a page out because I only really worked for an hour. That was a great page compared to the, you know, 15 pages or 30 page equivalent in a paperback. So I don't know. It's interesting to think about. But
yeah. So anyways, that has nothing to do with Feedly.
That's apropos of well, yeah. Except that's how I'll be spending my breaks, so
yeah. There you go.
Cool.
A half hour, catching up on your feeds every 90 minutes.
So, speaking of guys with split attention spans, Elon Musk has talked about his new supercharge stations, and they're doing a cool little demonstration because they really want to, biggest problem. His goal is and always has been to reduce all of the issues with electric cars to all the resistance to nothing, so that there's no reason to not get one. And, the cost is obviously a big one, but every generation of car that comes out is a major improvement, and it costs less, and they're ridiculously awesome looking cars. And so it's just, it's a very, he's doing a lot, but one of the big ones is obviously still the charging is an issue and the distance. So these supercharge stations, he actually wants to recoin them, which, good job, Elon. You coined them 3 months ago, and you already want to recoin them as something different. What the heck? But you are completely in charge of this. Like, why would you do that? One of the things that they want to do is they want to build a machine that will basically pop your battery out and put a new one in, like a Game Boy. And it's pretty cool because is basically they kind of built this all in without telling anybody. But I guess the batteries, what happens when they like actually bolt the batteries in with the car, they have these nuts that come underneath, they bolt them in, they've got tools that basically put the battery on the bottom of the drivetrain. And so this new system, they basically put that part of the factory that installs the battery just onto an underground compartment. So you drive over it, all the same sensors that locate where the nuts are in the factory, all the same robotic tools that would remove and install a battery are built underneath this little bay, and they pull the battery out and put a new one in. It takes about 90 seconds. They're going to start installing these into the supercharge stations so that when you go there, you can swap out your battery or you can charge. And so the deal is free, and is free, and it will continue to be free. But it takes like 30 minutes. You can get your car charged, 30 minutes, 200 miles. Or for a small fee, you basically wait in line until you drive over one of these bays, 90 seconds. They pop a new battery in, you're good to go for another chunk of distance. So he said basically...
Maybe not new, but charged at least.
Charged, yeah, thank you. So his argument is now you have to choose between, as a customer, you have a choice between free and convenience. Obviously the goal is to get to the cross-ex of both, but for now, it's a pretty good deal. And especially if you consider, even if it's a substantial fee of, like 20 or 30 bucks... compared to a gas tank, that's not necessarily a deal breaker. But the part about it was they do this demonstration where they basically had this dude in an Audi drive into a gas station and fill the tank completely up. And they played that film, they streamed that film on one screen while they had the Tesla come in and get its battery swapped just to show how much faster it was to get a new battery than compared to gas. And the best part is he drives off and Elon goes, that was awesome. That was really a great thing. But we want to give the gas car a little more of a chance. So while we're waiting for it to finish, we're going to bring another Tesla out. He did another Tesla swap. It was just like, oh, that was just cruel, man. That was just cruel.
That's just like, that's that classic, Jobsian showmanship that we talk about where you get that surprise. We're going to compare these two. Oh, yeah, it's actually twice as fast, not just a little bit faster.
Yeah.
And, and the way that he sets it up. Is that really loud?
I can hear it. I don't know what it is, though.
It's a train.
Oh.
But I just, classic showmanship where he's like, oh, it's actually twice as fast. Let's do another.
There are days where it's shocking to me to think that he and Steve Jobs weren't friends, because there's just so clearly just in how they build their product, how they show their product, how he does shows, how he talks about the future. He's just so Jobs. Yeah, that Jobsian describes Elon Musk so well in just, I mean, how he does it and how he goes about it. It's pretty amazing. But the other thing I wanted to mention kind of in conjunction with this is Nissan has announced that they're going to enter an electric car into the Le Mans endurance race, which is a pretty big deal. It'll be the first one to do it. And everybody was like, yeah, but it's an endurance race. It's a distance race. Like, how are you going to keep an electric car going? And Nissan was like, we're going to pop the batteries in and out. Just replace it with recharged batteries like it was a full fuel tank. So this whole idea, and this was something that was really not necessarily pioneered. What?
How does it, what is the race?
The Le Mans?
Yeah, do you know much about it?
Let me Google it so I don't... It's a 24-hour of Le Mans. It's let's see here. Come on. Wikipedia. How is it that Wikipedia wasn't my first? There we go. It's the... is the world's oldest active sports car race and endurance racing, held annually since 1923 near the town of Le Mans, France. I knew it was in France. Commonly known as the Grand Prix of Endurance, and if race teams have to balance speed against their car's ability to run for 24 hours without sustaining mechanical damage to the car and managing the car's consumables, primarily fuels, tires, braking, and materials, the endurance of the driver is likewise tested, as drivers frequently spend stints of over 2 hours behind the wheel before stopping in the pit, allowing a relief driver to take over drive duties. Drivers then grab food and rest in the can before returning to drive another stint. Today, it is mandated that three drivers share each competing vehicle. Yeah, so I knew, I was going to say, I'm glad I looked that up because I was going to butcher it. I knew it was a really, really tough race but in France, but yeah, it's huge. And all of the major car companies put cars into it, and, you know, it's a huge deal. So this is pretty exciting, and this is all stuff that was really, like, pioneered, and it was a concept that was... It wasn't necessarily new or anything, but it was the first time it gained real public notoriety was that one TED Talk where the dude basically was like, I can't remember the guy's name now, but he basically came out and was like, I had this kind of idea kicking around for making electric cars where you didn't charge them, you just swapped the batteries out, and you did it in an automatic changing bay, and he was like, I just kind of had this idea kicking around, and I've been sharing it with a few people, and somebody finally stepped up to him and said, you know, this is actually a great idea. I mean, it fixes the problem with electric cars. You could change the world if you were to do this. And the guy was like, yeah, I guess. And the guy was like, no, I don't think you understand. Like, why wouldn't you spend your life doing that? Why wouldn't you make this your goal to pioneer this technology? You can change the course of humanity by getting us off, like, combustible fuels in our cars. And the guy was like, you know what, that's a good point. I think I'm going to do that. And teamed up with a couple of companies, Japanese companies, to start building the cars. And it was a big, you know, they set up, they were going to start in Israel doing all this stuff. So it's pretty cool. To me, that was like, there's two obvious solutions with electric cars. There's the one is the swappable battery. And the second is the electric drivetrain with the hybrid being a generator, whether it's a hydrogen generator or a gas power generator, right, that powers the electric motor. So you move more and more over to purely electric with a gas, with simply a battery. And as you move away from different fuels, and that's how you deal with range. I mean, those are the only two real solutions. And it's awesome to see Tesla basically going, like, we've got both of these and we're going to do it. And, you know, woohoo, it's awesome. So I don't know. I'm excited. I am excited. And Nissan's going to dump a bunch of money into doing this and doing it really, really, really quickly. So should be fun.
So the Nissan Leaf, they say, is like the best-selling all-electric car. When are you getting your Leaf?
What? No. They claim that it's the best-selling all-electric car.
It's the world's best-selling all. Sold 65,000. They're little hatchbacks.
They only sold 65,000? Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know, that's all it takes to be the best.
I know. Well, no, it's a stupid car. It's not a stupid car. It's actually, it's funny. That is the drivetrain that it uses is the exact drivetrain that I just described. The problem is that they didn't put a very powerful electric motor in it. They didn't put a very good generator in it, and they put an entire incredibly small battery pack in it. So it's more of a hybrid than anything. It's has all the performance of a hybrid, but it's got a really good drivetrain in it. And it's just shocking to me that it costs as much as it does. But the problem is that it's like, you know, they've got a full-blown electric motor, a full-blown combustion motor, and a battery pack, and a gas tank. I mean, it's not a very difficult system to wrap your head around what they're doing, but it is kind of a challenge to actually build it. I don't understand why they don't do it with trucks, though, because the thing with a truck is that you could put a really great, you can get all the torque and power of an electric motor, which is way better and
but
way
more.
That's
how trains work, right?
Yeah, nowadays. Yeah, actually. And get these super powerful trucks, and then you could put a little tiny motor in it that's really efficient because it just runs at one, you know, speed until it charges the batteries up. And basically, even though the little gas generator couldn't deliver peak energies, it wouldn't need to. All it would need to do is charge the battery at a continuous rate. So you could actually build a smaller engine that's driving the electric motor, and you could build a way more efficient system. I don't understand why they go with the Nissan Leaf other than the truck, but except that I think that their fear is that you literally wouldn't be able to sell them because, you know, truck drivers don't want to drive no hybrid, you know, cars. And, which I think is stupid. I think that's the only reason why they go that way. I've never read anything that would suggest that there's a real hang-up there. Because everybody agrees that the performance of an electric truck would way outperform a combustion truck. And so it's really only a range issue, which I think you could easily take care of with this. And then all of a sudden now it's just a cost. But if it costs less over time and it's got better performance, I think you could easily get people to come around and paying a little bit more for their trucks.
Well, yeah, at least get the owners and investors on board.
Right.
And they'll go, I don't care. If you don't want to drive it, you can drive for someone else.
Right, exactly. So I don't know. I guess I think it's a matter of time at this point, and it's cool to see all these things moving along quickly, but I like it.
Okay.
So.
All right. There was some, I'm going to call it reverse news this week as well, I guess, because there was news last week, and then they undid the news last week.
It's the right way to... my favorite title was, it was an Xbox 180.
Yes, that is awesome.
Yeah.
Xbox 180. Oh, that is so...
Yeah, everybody was like, you wrote that article just to get that title out there. That's the reason you did it, and everybody clicked on it because of that title. It was brilliant.
Would she know? That's what it's about.
You know?
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
I might steal it for one.
I don't blame you. So, you know, and now we've given it credit, so everyone will be like, hey, that's a clever title when they read it, and then they'll be like, oh, wait, when they listen to the show. It is clever, because you didn't come up with it. So, Microsoft, or do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, I can. Microsoft essentially undo everything they said last week. No, not everything. Couple things. Number one, you no longer will have an internet connection required to play offline
nice.
Xbox One games, which is nice to have. And then you can also trade in, lend, resell, gift, and rent discs based on games you like, just like you do today. So they solved that big problem, and the one section that I liked, which did I put that? Did I throw notes? Yeah, I did. They were essentially like, we at Xbox love games. More importantly, we at Xbox love gamers. And so then they said, we're changing the way that you resell and the internet connection. You know, but they were just like, yeah, we were wrong.
Yeah.
Our bad. So that's the end of that social experiment.
Yeah, that was a crushing blow. And the problem, it's funny. There's so many different aspects of this. Number one, I'll start where I care. The engineering angle of this is fascinating because, like, they kept coming at it as, like, we can't just flip the switch and turn this off. Like, the gears are turning, and is leaving the station. We can't stop at this point and say, no, we're not, or it's not even leaving the station. It's almost arrived at the next station. We're basically done with the system. You know, you're talking about core firmware, not even, you know, not just like OS level. I mean, this is a big change that you'd be asking us to make. And everybody was like, boo. And then all of a sudden, like 3 days later, they're like, so we're going to turn that off. Which a lot of people were complaining because basically you're just saying you couldn't turn it off in order to try to, like, you know, pull one over on us. And a lot of the Microsoft employees, like, stepped up to bat and were like, no, you don't understand. Like, my life has been ruined for the next 3 months. Like, I don't have a social life anymore. I don't live in my apartment. I don't have kids or a wife or, you know, or if my grandmother dies, I get to call her on the phone 15 minutes because I'm, you know, while she's on her deathbed, because the rest of the time I'm going to be reprogramming the firmware, the operating system, the fundamental securities of this system. And what's going to be really interesting to me is, I think, will be what will happen when the system launches, because I think, you know, the expectation is that these things just work when they launch, and I don't think it will. I think you're going to have a lot of blue screens of death, as they were, a lot of, not necessarily red rings.
I mean, and you still got the $100 price premium. I still think... Sony is going to come out doing just fine as a result of this. You know, obviously that was their whole intent, was to take some of the wind out of Sony's sail, which, you know, they had a lot of wind supplied by Microsoft in it.
Yeah.
But, you know, so that was part of their intent. But I still think that Sony, just like you said, you know, it takes time to squash those bugs and to have all those people who buy them. You know, it's similar to when SimCity launched. You know, it was like, man, all sorts of issues, and we'd love to play and love to do stuff, but we can't. And, you know, they're gonna grapple with that.
Right, and I think it's one of those things where what really annoys me, I think what's going to be interesting is that this is such a role reversal where the last round, you know, the Sony PlayStation 3 was one of the most affordable Bluetooth players on the market at the time. Blu-ray, because Blu-ray had just launched, and so it was really thought of as more of an entertainment center investment that happened to have a game system, you know, attached to it, and they used that to justify the higher price than the competitor systems, and it came out with a bunch of buggy launch titles and just poor performance overall, and it was those three things, the lack of attention on games and the attention to it being an entertainment center, the price difference and the bugs caused it to just completely faceplant out the door. And it was going up against the Wii. That was the weird part, is that it wasn't even going up against its main competition, because, you know, Nintendo exists in their own little universe, like, it's just the strangest thing in the world. But, you know, but even given that it wasn't really competing directly with the Wii, it just was a timing thing. And I always make the argument that if you're competing for my dollars, you're competing against this other stuff. I don't care if your pizza company doesn't think you're competing with the movie that I'm going to go see later in the night. But if I end up spending my money on the movie instead of your pizza, guess what? You're competing. And so, you know, very practical way they are competing, but they're how they see their competition, I should say. And now it's toe to toe. It's just which of the two super powerful systems are we going to go with? Microsoft seems to have literally done their best to copy all of the things that Sony did to completely, you know, mess up last time around. it's wacky, man. It's wacky.
Well, it's like, it's kind of weird if you think about it, because when Sony did the PS3, you know, for the most part, they were flying high. They were on top with the PS2. And so it's almost like you walk in with a confidence of, hey, we can, I don't want to say maybe we can get away with this, or we can, you know what I mean? We can push the bounds and the envelope and people will buy because we've kind of got a lock in. And you suddenly find out very, very quickly, oh, never mind. No, we don't.
Right. And the big question to me is, what could Microsoft do at this point to, you know, try to negate the problem?
I think if they are able to ship a product that's not buggy, I think they'll be okay. I think that $100 price premium is going to be a tough pill to swallow, but, you know, they do something like, oh, you know, we threw in gold membership for a year.
Yeah, that's
something
true.
Something that, you know, you go, it's cool, I can try that for a year, and now they got that recurring revenue, because once you do it, I'm very highly doubt you'd ever stop.
Right.
And, you know, so well, I can see them doing something like that, or get the price a little bit closer. I don't know. They work with game developers to get their prices $10 less.
Right. That could, you know, that would make a difference.
They really play up the download thing, so it gets rid of the you know, again, it does exactly what we said, right? You know, let people trade just like normal, but then highly, highly, highly encourage developers to make them downloadable and sell them for a little bit less because they don't have to make the discs anymore.
Right.
And, you know, so me as a consumer, yeah, I'm looking at the hardware, but I'm also looking at the, here's my printer vernacular coming out, you know, the supplies, the, you know, the consumables, the games. Well, what's the price of a game going to cost me? And I can quickly start to do the math and I go, okay, I know I'm going to buy 2-3 games a year, or this is, I'm going to, you know, if I buy 10 games in the next 3 years, which I know I will do, the system, and, you know, or at least the same price. So I think you can, I don't know. But I think, right, if they make a good machine that doesn't have bugs and they continue to make good games, I don't think it'll matter.
Yeah, and I think they really did kind of – I think their biggest thing is that they squashed one of the biggest drumbeats of their issues, you know, early enough where I think it's not going to quite become as much of a – you know, prejudice against the system as it could have been, which was...
Yeah, we'll all forget about it by the time it actually releases.
Right. It'll be more of a footnote of something stupid they did, and the only real lingering ghost of it will be any bugs that are in the system because of, you know, whatever. But it's not like nobody's, you know, free of bugs, because PlayStation, or Sony pushed out their PlayStation 3 this... last week and bricked like 10% of their systems. It's just like, what the heck,
oh,
guys? Yeah, I know. So, you know, and really it doesn't. That's the problem, is it like almost never happens, but it did happen this time. It's a bit of a mistake. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Whoops. What do you mean? Whoops. You and I have got to work on our communication.
That way.
Oh. Oh, that's a great movie. I should watch that tonight.
That is. I want to watch Superman again. I'll get there.
You know what movie I really want to watch tonight? And I might actually download it, is The Matrix. I haven't watched The Matrix in such a long time. That's such a
great
movie.
You got to download it? I thought you owned the DVD of it.
I do, but it's at home.
You see, you got to do what I did, which is I converted all my movies that I wanted into digital formats.
Yeah.
And I've got just an external hard drive, and so I'm just not taking up all the space on my computer. But when I want to watch something, just quickly download it onto my machine, watch it.
Right.
Which is really fun when, like, going on vacations and stuff, because it's just, oh, I'll just load, which on my wife's laptop, not mine, because I have an iMac. But just... You know, we'll load up 5-6 movies, and you go, all right, cool, we're set. So, like, when we take this road trip to Colorado, July, sometime, middle of July, that's what we'll do, and we'll just watch movies for the 23-hour trip.
Woo.
Yeah. No, we'll float
that's
up.
That's right. Colorado is a long distance from you. That's a long trip for me, too, but it's a lot longer for you all the way up in Oregon.
And where I can tell I'm getting older, too. because I have actually like reserved for just one, because it's going to take 2 days to do it. But I, you know, I went ahead and did the math and was like, okay, if we leave this time, we drive this fast, where would we stop? And
are you saying you're getting older because you're exercising more wisdom, or are you saying you're getting older because you don't like the adventure of having to sleep in the car as much?
Yeah, that one. Because it used to be, just drive until I get tired. We'll find a rest area, pull off to the side, or, you know, a Walmart parking lot, whatever. And we'll sleep for, you know, somewhere between 2 and 4 hours and then drive again.
Do you take the Prius or the Jeep on those kind of long trips? Probably the Prius, right?
Well, we'll take the Prius, which it was really nice when I had the truck because I could actually stretch all the way across. And Jessie could be in the back seat, I could be in the front seat, and then she could keep sleeping and I could drive after I woke up. But the problem, and here's what killed me. We took the Jeep once. Vinny.
Yeah.
He did not do well in the car. So we were driving to California, pulled over at a rest area. Because you know, the game I like to play is, we'll leave Friday night, we'll drive as far as we get, and then we'll just wake up and we'll be there Saturday morning, go out to breakfast, you know, have our day. But all night, every single time a car drove by, what was that? What was that? And then he was barking at things. And at a rest area, there's like cars every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he slept during the day because he had been up all night. I'm just like, I hate you, dog.
Yeah. That's funny.
So he's coming with us, too, which is kind of the other, you know, we'll sleep in the hotel. We'll still only sleep, you know, 4 or 5 hours and then hit the road. But
yeah.
I'm getting older, man. I can't do that.
That's funny, man. That's funny. Yeah, I'm not quite there yet. I got another 3 years. So.
Now, all that to say, I did find, you know, like, budget in and stuff like that, so it's going to cost me an extra, I think it's like an extra $60 or $70 for both of them.
Yeah.
The way there and the way back. So it's like, that's the other part. I'm like, that's worth it. I can pay that.
Yeah, that's, I waste that much money on stupid stuff all the time. That's not true, but it feels...
Well, I managed to really derail. I don't even remember what brought that up. But what I want to talk about, I have no transition. here we go. Speaking of getting older and like rethinking your decisions. What if you had an opportunity to your Yahoo username?
To what?
Would you be interested?
To do what with it?
To a better one? So, like, for example, my Yahoo username is semi-random. It's my gamer tag, I guess. Not professional at all, let's put it that way. It's gamer tag. And it just so happens that Yahoo is... they're going to release inactive Yahoo IDs.
Oh, yeah.
So if you wanted, you could score a better email address, you know, depending on availability.
Right.
So, you know, it's Yahoo's a little older. They've got some older users, some of which are no longer using the service for various reasons.
Right.
And it sounds like they've got this whole database of inactive names that they'd love to free up for other people.
Right.
So that's what they're going to be doing on July 15th. You'll have an opportunity to trade up if you wanted. Instead of having like Albert go 399, you have Albert.
Yeah, I'll bet. I'm going to say, if I could get Matthew@yahoo.com, I'd consider using one as like a serious Yahoo, but I can't. That's the problem.
I was going to see if they had James as an option. I was like, why not? You know, I'll just test some that I think would be cool.
Yeah.
But
yeah, the real problem is that most of the ones that, so it's July 15th. Well, I'll look. I mean, if I can catch Matthew before somebody else takes the nanosecond before they take it, I'll take it and I'll use it too. I mean, that's pretty cool. Whenever you can get one of like the really common names at you know, Yahoo. That's pretty awesome. But the problem is that, like, any variation of professional, you know, Yahoo.coms I would use, Matthew Furlow's not taken. Matthew D. Furlow's not taken. Matthew Dean Furlow's not taken. You know, Matthew Dot Furlow. You know, it's these kind of things are never very exciting for me because I look it up, oh, my goodness, can we get it? And, yeah, you can get it. The only one, actually, Furlow at Yahoo.com might not be taken. The other part of it is that, you know, that email address is already being used by somebody. Somebody, I mean spam bots. Which means that you probably would open up day one to like just a flood of spam from, you know, girls in your local area. And you're like, what the heck? Like, how did you? Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm using somebody else's stuff.
That's interesting that you say that because it was actually the thought was you may not be able to get one because this is going to be awesome for spammers. Because, and here was their thing. There are a lot of people, and I fall into this camp, where I use Yahoo as a backup for, like, say, Gmail.
Right.
And so I haven't logged in. I've logged in for other reasons, but I can see where theoretically you haven't logged in for a time, and so it's vulnerable to be, you know, repossessed. And it gets taken over by a malicious person because they know. And what they're really going for is to get your Gmail address.
Right.
And you can see this chain of events where they get that, then they get your online banking, they get your social media, and it just kind of, you know, because if you're like me, and I think a lot of people are, my email address, if you get rid of the @, you know, that says a lot, you know, that, okay, you're halfway there.
Well, you see the thing, and that if you can,
and now if you got the backup to the Gmail, you know what I mean, where you could start to, I don't know. It will be interesting.
This is why you make robust passwords. Yeah. I don't know.
There's a part of me that's like, they should really figure this out because, you know, as time goes on, this will become a bigger and bigger issue.
Right.
Unless someone figures out how to, like, sell email addresses, just like you can.
No. The real solution is, and this is actually something that we.
Like family heirlooms. I have James@yahoo.com.
I know. I think what you'll find, and we've talked about this outside of the podcast before. We might have talked about it in the podcast too. But the idea that you have a unique 10-digit number code that identifies the address of your audio communications, aka your phone number, is kind of archaic. I mean, it's ridiculous. Why is it that I have to tell somebody my 10-digit passcode when I give them Matthew@furlow.com as my email address? I don't think I've ever given that one out before.
That's reason number two why we don't care about the Yahoo email.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You and I both, we got exactly what we wanted.
Yeah, we have the best possible email, you know. The Matthew@yahoo.com is
P.S. to get that, folks. Had to negotiate with a guy in Slovenia to get the furlow.com domain name, and it was worth it.
I tell people this story all the time because it's awesome. And it's funny. It's disappointing how rarely people pick up on the fact that, wait, you have your first name at your last name.com? Yeah. What the heck? How did you do that? Like, I want that. And then I have to tell them, like, we did it the old school way. You buy the domain, you set up an internet server on the domain, you hook it up to Gmail so that, you know, as a POP client, and then you do the whole thing. I mean, like, and mostly this is my brother doing it. Like, you know, I just kind of ended up with a great, you know, email address at the end of it. Which, by the way, will it to me. WillFurlow.com to me.
You seem to be operating under the assumption that you're going to outlast me.
Oh, wow. Hey, man, I lost a lot of weight recently, okay? And you're older than me. That was really dark, dude. That was really dark. thanks for that, man. I got to go contemplate my life.
That was more a commentary on my hopes for longevity rather than
A big brother taking out his aggression on a little brother?
Just so you know, that was, it was more optimistic view of me than pessimistic of you.
So, yeah, but we
have... Moving on!
Yeah. I don't know. But what I was going to say, coming back to this whole idea of, like, I think what you do is you say there are these underlying markers, right? Your email address is one. Your phone number is one. Your AIM username is one.
Fingerprint.
Yeah. Exactly. That's what I was going to go to. Is you have all of these unique usernames that are tethered to you, and the trick really is to figure out how to get those linked to you in a way that you are unique. You have a unique fingerprint that all of these different accounts are linked to. And then at some point, it doesn't really matter what your username is, because now it's just a matter of, which is really what all of this is going towards, right?
Almost,
that's the whole idea.
It's almost like you need, how would I describe this? Like, I'm thinking like a personal DNA, what you are given at birth, which can be a social security number for all I care. But it's like, think of it like your mailing address, right? As you know, because you've now moved. You then tell the switchboard, the post office, hey, send all my mail to here now. This is my address. And as far as the post office is concerned, that address can point to multiple, and it could, who it points to could change over time, but they just know, oh, okay, I'm going to deliver mail here, and they've told me this is where they're at, you know, and I'm not describing it very well. But,
which
you know,
is
you
really
move,
much-
and someone else registers, but they still deliver to the same place. So you could set it up where it's like, and landlines used to be this way, and heck, so were phone numbers before, you know, some rule changed and you could take them with you. But, you know, it was this idea of, hey, you know, this email address, this now points to me, and the system, whether it's Yahoo or Gmail, is smart enough to know, oh, that's his inbox. Clearly Yahoo is, because they're willing to give them away to new people.
Right.
So they have some system of differentiating users, but it would be cool if there was some sort of universal, I'm thinking like Social Security or even something greater to make it international,
right,
level of identification. Big Brother will really be watching.
I was going to say, I mean, you know, between the Mark of the Beast and the NSA, I'm not much for worrying about that kind of stuff, obviously, but, you know, we are kind of pushing it to the breaking point. If it's going to break, that's where it's going to break. But at the same time, it's like that's where it all goes. That's the general direction that we put. Because I guess what my point is that it doesn't make any sense to have your identity be tethered to your address. Where right now we use our address as our identity. You use your matthew@gmail.com as your username for – I don't have matthew@gmail.com.
Oh, that's right. You don't. You're
good. Say,
you're good.
I'm just going to give them away all the way today. Honestly, but
that would be awesome if you did.
Dude,
I think it was fun fact, person on the show, David Perry. I think he said that when he first joined Twitter, I can't remember what it was. It was either David at David or at Perry was available, and he didn't take it.
He's got to be at Perry, right? I mean, David would be absurd if he could. If he could have gotten at David, not.
Ugh. He was on really, really early, and. Yeah, it was something like that. And he didn't even think about it. He just did his gamer tag because that's what he does. And,
right. Oh.
And so he was just – and then it was in retrospect because you could look up when someone started, you know, when they joined. And so later on he went and looked and went, are you kidding me? I was on like 2 months before this person. I could have had awesome – it might have been David.
Oh, right.
But, you know, whatever it was that – because he also didn't realize that Twitter would become another one of those – type of ID things.
Right.
Like, ah!
Yeah. Whoa. So, you know who I really hate, though, and I talk about him every once in a while in my birdie passion, is Matt Mullenweg, because he's got ma.tt.
But don't worry, he hates the dancing Matt, or, you know, where's Matt, or whatever that is.
Yeah, that's true.
He outranks him in the search engines.
Yeah,
that's... Search for Matt, or Matthew, whatever it is.
But, yeah.
So... Well, have people you hate. It's okay.
Yeah. There's always a bigger fish in the sea, man. Unless you're the dancing Matt, in which case, you're just on top.
Which he's probably like, man, I wish I had matthew.com or matt.com.
Right, yeah. Matt.com. Well, actually, now we're going to say that's the tough one. Matt.com. Let's see. It's a Matt furniture store. Matt's blog, Thoughts on Life and Liberty. Really? Mortality Without God. Introducing Pactualism, a new ethical framework. This guy sounds boring.
What?
Wow. What? How did he get Matt.com?
I feel like with a little bit of money.
It's funny. You know
you
what?
Get on this.
I'm going to say. You know what? But I don't want Matt.com. You know which one I want. I'm not a Matt. You walk on a Matt. I want, oh my goodness, Matthew.com's a blank site. It's blank in that it's owned by somebody who wants to charge obscene amounts for it. But,
you know, you just got to ask.
It's true. They might be hurting for cash, and I might have just enough to tempt them my way. Anyways, but all this goes back to the idea of, it doesn't make any sense to have, like you were saying, you need to have your identity, and there needs to be a unique fingerprint, whether it's DNA or a ring that you keep with you, or a DNA reading ring that you keep with you, or a USB stick or something, or just the nature of the devices that you use. Because if you think about it, your Apple ID is your ID, and it has a number of addresses in that it's got your iPad, your iPhone, and your Mac. If you have the whole suite in your Apple TV, as this suite of different IP addresses where it can send everything, and then within that context, it's got a bunch of different services that it can push around, whether it's iMessage or FaceTime or iTunes. And so they do that to a large they do that to a large degree where, you know, they do that, all that management of the difference between your address and your ID and the different services you're going for, and automatically, you know, handle all of that, which it doesn't, I think that this is a moot point. I think within the next, 5 years, especially 10 years, holy cow, I don't think you'll have to worry about, especially because we all hold, carry our smartphones with us. If this becomes your unique fingerprint on the web, and as long as it's near the computer that you're trying to log into, then all that is your ID. And then when you, bump phones to share your identity, your information, or, AirDrop or whatever, when you connect, say, this is my identification on everything, when I give it to you, I can give you access to different accounts, and but you've gotten the core communication, link, and now it's just a matter of what I give you access to. Do I give you my phone number? I give you my email. I give you this. I give you that. I give you my Reddit. I give you my Facebook. I give you my, or can I just give you everything? I think that that's the direction it goes, and at that point, who cares what your email address is? Because you're not going to type your email address, and you're going to type the person's name, or more likely, you're just going to flip through your contact list until you get to the person's name. You're going to tap and press on that, and then you're going to be like, "Hey, girl, let's go hang out Friday night," and you won't really care whether you're talking to them through Gmail or FaceTime or whatever cool service is out there. It'll just pick whichever one you've prioritized, and it'll go that route. Or in Apple's case, whatever is prioritized for on your behalf, because it knows better than you, so I think that's where it's going to go. And it's interesting that Yahoo's doing this, and I think it's a good publicity stunt, really, because what it really is going to do is revitalize the use of Yahoo.com as an email address, because it's going to allow people to go and look for the cool address. Outside of that, man, I don't know if it's that big of a long-term mission. I think eventually you just get to the point that your ID, your name, and the best part about it is that, if you have a unique fingerprint, it doesn't matter if there's another Matthew Dean Furlow out there, his unique fingerprint's different than mine, so you can have two different names that, whatever, I don't care. Like, you got to find my unique, the real trick will be being able to figure out, which one of us is the right Matthew Dean Furlow, and the answer is me, kill the other one. So I don't know. That's my thoughts on that. So do you share videos?
I wanted to do a different introduction.
Go for it.
Just because it's funny. Did you know that this week Facebook announced that it's out of ideas?
Did it now? I can tell.
It did. Yeah. To your video sharing thing.
Yeah.
I love these two paragraphs here. Facebook has continued to grow since, but other services have grown faster. Facebook's response, from its new privilege perspective, has been to behave with a mixture of jealousy and ruthlessness. It blatantly ripped off Snapchat with Poke, which was a flop. It responded to the rise of messaging apps with a messaging app of its own, which was a success. It released a clear Instagram ripoff, which was a failure, before buying Instagram. They also recently did hashtags. Today, Instagram founder Kevin Systrom took the stage to give an uncharacteristically forced and wooden speech about a new video feature in his app. The invitation on the event said, "A small team has been working on a big idea." Systrom's script included more than once the phrase, "This changes everything."
The app,
in every important way, resembles Twitter's suddenly popular Vine, which I got another paragraph, but before that, I love the photo on BuzzFeed. It says, it says a small team has been working on a big idea, and they crossed out the word big, and they wrote in something else, so it says now a small team has been working on someone else's idea. Ooh, it burns. Yeah. So another paragraph, it said, "Another way to interpret this, Facebook is out of ideas. In its view, nobody else can innovate, because without Facebook, an innovation doesn't matter. An idea isn't big, or a big idea, wait, how is this? An idea isn't a big idea until it's on Facebook, the real internet, with its billions graphed out users. Facebook's own innovations, like graph search, are limited by the same skewed perspective. They're all based on the premise that people want more Facebook."
Right.
So hopefully you can tell how I feel about their latest announcement.
Yeah. It's tough. I like the community on Vine a lot more. I think the forced 6-second videos. It's interesting because it's. So this is the comparison one is so. Yeah, it's basically Vine for Instagram, which is a subsidiary of Facebook, so it's Vine for Facebook. Vine is a subsidiary of Twitter, so it's kind of the two big dogs are having a proxy war, which is pretty fun from that perspective. So the video length, the big difference is video length, 15 seconds on Instagram versus 6 seconds on Vine. Filters, which I think is a mistake. Filters, Instagram yes, Vine no.
Really?
Awesome.
Really? You don't think filters is a mistake, huh?
No. I think filters is fine. I'm just not that – it doesn't thrill me. I think it's the video length that's a mistake. But it's a I think it makes it clearly a different service. I think Facebook did it because they're trying to show off their technological prowess. I think the 6-second videos are way funnier, which is what I will once a day look at all the new videos on Vine and laugh my head off because of all the funny people I follow. And watching them come up with something funny in 6 seconds, it's all slapstick. Whereas 15 seconds gives you just enough time to actually develop something. And so it doesn't happen as quickly. It's not quite as exciting. And the other thing is that because you have 15 seconds and they give you a little more, a little more editing ability. It really kind of forces, it allows creators to create fewer, higher quality videos, which is not why I'm there. I want 8 6-second stupid funny videos, and it's the classic video, or what's that one movie? I don't know if you've ever seen it. Idiocracy. Have you ever seen Idiocracy? It's a brilliant movie about the future of humanity, where the premise is that smart people don't reproduce and stupid people reproduce. And so
I've heard about this recently. Was it you? Were we talking about this last week?
I don't think so. I think
someone else was.
Probably. It's a brilliant movie and it's really funny.
What's it called again?
Idiocracy. It's kind of rowdy. There's some pretty stiff language, but the argument that are in it, it's almost necessary because the whole argument is that as society becomes dumber and less classy, it becomes, you know, a little more rowdy, and so there's some strong language, but that's about as bad as it gets from a not safe for children perspective. But the one of the most popular TV show is it's called Ouch My Balls. It's basically videos of this dude getting kicked in the balls and hit in the balls, and you're just like, what the heck? And it's like, and the guy on the couch just laughing the whole time. And when I watch Vine videos, I feel like that's what I'm watching. But it's funny. So one of the editing tools that I like is that, you know, like, it's the whole you release videos and you can pause and play and stuff. And one of the things that Instagram do is that when you do that break video, if you take your finger off, you can go back and delete the last clip. So you can do like three takes of something and then do the last clip a few times. And so it's if you want to get the right reaction or whatever, it just gives it a little more editing ability, which is actually a cool feature, I think. Front-facing camera, yeah, they both allow it. You can't import videos, which I have a love-hate relationship with that.
Yeah.
You know, if I want to import videos, I should put it on Facebook, I guess. But I like the idea of I wish if Instagram allowed me to import videos, even just 15-second videos, I actually think it would be a significantly different enough service where I think it would be successful. But it's the fact that both of them are considered creation, whereas to me, Instagram is not a creation tool. It's a sharing tool.
And what was crazy about Instagram is I remember I read this article and it said the dirty secret behind the best Instagrammers, because, you know, back when they had like favorites and stuff, you know, tops and whatever, was that they didn't an Instagram. They took it with a camera and then they had different app, you know, editing and filters. And then they had it the way they wanted. Then they uploaded it to Instagram and didn't put any filter. And, you know, and everyone was like, these are amazing. You're like, well, yeah, because they did a real HDR photo and imported it. And that's why it looks like amazing HDR. And
yeah,
they were like, that was the secret, which I immediately, and then they listed a whole bunch of the top apps and I went and tried them and, you know, downloaded my own Camera Plus, pretty awesome. And, you know, and did that. And I'm kind of like, man, there's gotta be something similar for video where people, you're going to have professional videographers who are like, no, I want to pull in like the real deal. Give me the creative stuff. I'm okay if you crop it down to a square, but let me add my filters. Let me add my special effects. Let me add voiceover. You know, let me do all those things that make a great video. You know, let me draw do a 15-second animated video.
Yeah, exactly.
And upload that. And, you know, I think I it's got to be just a technical thing, right? Where importing a video like that is going to be
I don't think that's what it is. I think Vine decided, well, number one, you don't have to build in any editing software. Vine is super simple.
When Vine first launched, they didn't include the front-facing camera. And to me, it was like, wow, that feels like something you should do. I feel like they were like, let's just get it out there. Let's get feedback.
That's exactly what I mean. And because they put all these different limitations on it, like they didn't allow uploading, they didn't allow – it was basically it had one functionality. You hit the button and it records until you take your finger off, and then after 6 seconds of – it posts. There's no editing. There's absolutely no editing. And it's just a super simple – it records and then it posts. It's a crazy simple app, and in a lot of ways – like broken in its simplicity, like we talked about the other week, where they uploaded the entire Rickroll and Rick Astley, and you sit there and you go, it's because of that simplicity that it forced a community to, you know, you. A lot of times, the best creativity comes from constraints. Why was Jaws so great? It's because the shark that they wanted to show was broken. So they had to do a lot of tricks to imply that there was a shark, which was way scarier than actually showing the shark. And so it ended up being this great movie because of the constraints. And this is one of those cases where Vine is all about constraints, whereas I think of Instagram, they tried to open it up, like keep some of the constraints. And so it walks this classic Facebook style. It walks this weird like line of instead of being all one thing or all the other – And since it can't be the one thing that they're copying, they don't go all the way to the other and they miss the boat. And I feel like it's not going to take off because the problem, you know, the only thing it's got going for it is I got way more followers on Instagram. So I'm more inclined to push it onto Instagram, except that it's super easy to publish it to Facebook and Twitter and everything else through Vine. So I, you know, most of my videos that I want to share, I do share. And anybody who follows me on the Twitter will see it. And so I get there like, you know, image stabilization, Instagram's got image stabilization, which is pretty cool. Drafts is coming soon, according to Vine. Save to the camera roll, they both let you do that.
Well, I still, man, I come back to your whole, like, the sharing thing. Technically, Instagram allows you to share to more places, but I think Vine does a better job of sharing. Because they were talking about, like, just a simple one, Instagram doesn't allow embedding. Which I'm like, that's so stupid, you know? You should allow embedding just like you would with a photo. But they also don't allow embedding on Twitter with photos, and which is a total loss, but...
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I think there's a lot of different technical issues there that they're dealing with, trying to figure out how to handle that much data, which I understand, and I don't want to give that short shrift. You know, there's especially Twitter. You know, is the king of knowing what happens when you open up too many venues at the same time and your servers can't handle it. So I think they're very cautious whenever they create a new service, and they realize that if they can't get the scale, it causes more problems than good. And so Vine is intentionally constrained because they're afraid of scale, and that's been a big part of their stepping stone. Whereas Facebook, I think they know how to do scale. I think they could do scale, and I think if they just did sharing videos, like sharing photos, and included a really simple editing app in the tool, I think they're making a mistake. And they're opening themselves up where it's like, you know, instead of getting a big user base, the only thing is that Instagram's already got a big user base, and all they've done is now giving you something where they're not necessarily going to cede more and more territory to Vine. If you're not already on Vine, you're not necessarily going to jump over there. And until one
stopped.
Of them,
yeah,
that's it. And until one of them really allows you to expand, you know, or to start uploading your videos, I don't think one of them is going to be the clear, you know, you're not going to have another arms race. But as soon as one of them opens up the functionality, the other will. I'm just surprised that Facebook didn't do it, because I think they could, and I think they could actually do damage to Vine, or at least acknowledge the fact that they're two different things. They're two different services that are very similar and a crossover, but they're two different things with two different services and two different communities, and that they both can, quote, coexist. But Facebook wants to kill Vine, which I think they're wrong, man. I just think that I think they can't do that. And they're going to, instead of turning it into a great service that really gets even more people on Instagram, they're just getting criticism, and it's actually driving people to check out Vine, because if people hear me say, dude, there's so many funny people on Vine, and they go, well, who do you follow? And I go, well, you know, the guy who does, what's the one Manly Meal thing?
Manly Meal?
Hunger. Shoot. What's his name? Oh, shoot. Okay.
Is there any way for me to see who you are following?
Yeah, if you just go to my Vine account, you should be. It's just like Twitter. Really? You can see who I'm following.
I've done 8 posts and I've liked 3. I'm pretty. So you're following. There you are, Matthew Dean Furlow. Who are you following? Candles won't go out. How do I tell who you're following? Oh, following. Following 11 people. Wow.
Yeah, I'm not Epic Meal Time. That's what it is. See, yeah, I only follow like 2 funny people. I have like 3 funny people. But they put so many videos.
Epic Meal Time's pretty funny.
Oh, dude, Epic Meal Time is amazing.
Wait, I don't see him.
Great. It's the main dude of Epic Meal Time. His name is Harley Morristan.
Oh, I see it. Done.
But he does that.
Anybody else? Who else is funny? Who else?
The other one that I like to follow that he's pretty funny is Casey James. He's pretty good.
James.
And yeah. Jordan Burt are the... Jordan Burt doesn't post as much. Casey James posts all the time, but those three are pretty funny.
Okay, done.
And they will fill up your Vine feed, too. That's the best part. They make so many videos, you don't even need to worry about it. But
perfect.
I'm always on the... If anybody's got suggestions, don't be afraid to comment on us, because I like to look for more. But, you know, I shrug my shoulders and I go, they're actually causing more chatter about Vine as people are going, well, why would I go to Vine now? And then people like me go, because there's some great creators and there's already an amazing, thriving community on there that's worth your time. And they go, oh, I'll check it out. And so they check out Vine instead of Instagram because it's, I don't know. I think this is one of those classic Facebook just trying to catch somebody before they get, you know, so far ahead that they can't catch up. And in so doing, they drive more people to talk about it. Because we didn't really talk about Snapchat until Poke came out. And I use Snapchat as the first
right
now. You know, and it's like it's the Facebook effect, in effect, but against Facebook. You know,
which is interesting. Another article that was talking about if, you know, they're like, is Mark Zuckerberg the new Bill Gates? Because of these actions, and they're like, and not just because they're both Harvard dropouts, but they were like, you know, it's a similar deal where Gates would see something cool and they would just announce that they're working on it and they'd watch the stocks tumble. You know, they got in trouble and stuff. But at the time, they were like, Microsoft could get away with that because they had a monopoly. They were the single operating system. And so, you know, when they said it, everyone was like, well, gosh, I'm already on it. And they were saying that the big difference between Facebook and Microsoft is that Facebook isn't the one ecosystem. Okay, yeah, sure. They're the friend graph and your friend, you know, the feed of your friends. But the operating systems are very different. You know, they don't own the operating system at all. And there are other sharing services like Twitter out there that are holding their own. You know, and so... They were just like, yeah, he's in some ways playing very much the way that Bill would, which that is just a creepy picture of Bill Gates.
Right.
He's like, it's the kind of picture you would expect Steve Jobs to be in, where he's like side saddle on his desk on top of
right
it, like this seductive look, but it's Bill Gates. So you're just like,
he
oh,
just
boy
comes off as a total creeper. Those eyes, oh man.
But anyways, so they were saying, like, you know, so he's trying to do some of these things, but it's probably not going to work as well just because they don't have the monopolistic power that's kind of required to get away with some of the stuff they're doing. They're just ticking off users and, you know, and showing us that, you know, they don't necessarily have our best interest in mind.
Right. And I really do think they do themselves more harm than good with this sort of thing. I mean, clearly with Snapchat they did. They drove more people to Snapchat. Snapchat is thriving today because Facebook tried to attack it and lost. And what it does is every time that happens, every time the giant loses, it gives the next company that much more incentive to say, no, you can't beat us. And so if you want to buy us, it's going to cost you $2 billion. We buy Instagram for $1 billion, I know. That's why we're worth two. You know.
Well, and I think they said they tried to buy Twitter for $500 million back in the day, and that didn't work out so great. And, you know, and they copied Foursquare, and ultimately they got out of the check-in and switched it to just location status updates. But, no, there's I don't know. On the other hand, it's kind of like if they didn't do this kind of stuff, you'd be like, man, what are you guys working on? What are you doing over there? How are you staying relevant? Because these services
right
are taking off and you need to have them.
Well,
they were leading the forefront of it. You know, what's the next thing that Facebook comes up with where we go, oh, wow, this is cool. This is awesome.
Yeah, that's a big thing. That is a big thing. They got these like brilliant engineers. They can obviously pump out these services in weeks. And, you know, but they don't ever come up with new ideas. And the other thing
is Crash Search.
Yeah, I know.
Amazing.
Yay. And the problem that I have is that it's like on one hand you've got, you know, you've got the fact that they don't come up with new ideas. They don't really push the envelope on this sort of thing. They don't push the envelope on new technology, and they don't excite people about their services. And then on the other hand, when they do attack competition, they don't do it ruthlessly and brutally, and they don't just, you know, they don't do the obvious of let users upload videos. You know, there's already a community for sharing. It's already part of the functionality. Let me do my editing outside of it. Let me post videos. What the heck? You know, just make it a 12-second limit and have a little bar thing that I drag back and forth and I can pinch and squeeze to tell you how much of the video I want to post. You know, and then they'll shrug their shoulders and go, well, that's what YouTube's for. You're like, but don't make it YouTube. Make it 12 seconds. Give me just enough of a constraint, and I think that you could actually build up that. I don't know. It just is. And maybe that's the problem. Maybe that's the problem, is that they shrug their shoulders and they go, on one hand YouTube, and the other hand you got Vine. We're not going to fight with YouTube. That's stupid. And, you know, but we have a chance with Vine, so we'll just take them on. We'll see what we do. And they were going to win if we didn't compete. And if they win because we do compete, well, at least we compete. We try. You know, and maybe that's their attitude. And it's they don't really care if they lose, because they are, if they didn't try, they were going to lose anyways. So I don't know. It just, I feel like they missed the obvious ones, and, you know, where they, the obvious next feature that everybody wants from Vine that they could do because they can do scale, and they skipped it because for whatever reason they decided it wasn't worth adding that functionality. Vine hadn't shown them how to do it yet, so they weren't going to do it. You know, in classic anti-Apple fare, you know, Apple hasn't shown you how to do multitasking yet, so you haven't done multitasking. Whatever stupid excuse, you know. Whatever.
So you're sticking with Vine. That's what I'm hearing.
Well, it's fun. Yeah, probably. Probably. I think I like Instagram because of its editing capabilities, but I think I'll stick with Vine on a whole. But
okay, you're allowed to do that.
Thank you. I appreciate you giving me permission. You'll probably
really
stick with Instagram
video.
Yeah, I understand. Maybe.
Actually, I haven't done a video yet on Instagram, so...
Yeah. Did you see my video on Instagram?
Yeah, I think I did. It was unmemorable, but...
What? Everybody has seen it that I know, they're like, well, that's really funny. That's awesome. The habanero?
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
Oh, wow. That's... But it was unmemorable. Jerk.
Well, I had to... Well, I remember it now. Yeah, that was on Instagram, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It harkened me back to childhood days of listening to you eat.
And, oh, yes. Dude, I listened to it, and I was like, it annoyed me watching the video, but I was like, I was probably, number one, I felt like that was part of the charm of it, and number two, I had just eaten a habanero, and although I had another one sitting next to me, I wasn't about to eat another one right then. So I was like, you know what, this is the one. I could do it without all the lip smacking, but it's too bad, so sad. I'm posting this one.
I watched that and went, no. Gross.
Gross. Did you even finish the video? The best is at the end.
I did. But I'm your brother. I struggle with those things.
I know.
I'm allowed to.
I know. Like I said, it annoyed me too.
I didn't think you were wearing a shirt either.
What? No, I was
wearing
a shirt.
I don't
know. I was wearing a white shirt in a whitewashed lighting setting, so it meant it looked like I was bare-chested, but I was wearing my undershirt. I just gotten working out. I was in the mood for a habanero, so I went and ate one. I don't understand why my brain does it to me sometimes. No, it sounds good. Incredible amounts of pain for the next 4 hours.
I like it. Speaking of incredible amounts of pain, I don't know.
I'm going to see where you went with that one.
Speaking of, I just went, this would be a really awesome transition if I can pull it off.
Yeah.
But I was like, and speaking of incredible amounts of pain, LG is making new displays that can take an incredible amount of pressure.
Ooh, yeah.
Because they're bendable. Which we've talked about this before, but LG is, they're getting ready to like actually mass produce flexible displays.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Have they decided what they're going to do with them yet? Produce them? Hope somebody else figures it
might,
out?
Oh, it sounds like they might put the Galaxy Note 3. Oh, no, they were going to. But now they can't because of manufacturing issues.
Their hope is that they're
going to make a ton of them and
somebody will figure out what to do with it.
That is some phones and yeah.
I still think that the idea of a flexible screen, the cool thing to me is the fact that you can do static shapes. You know, I think there's a lot of like this idea of like roll-up scroll screens or flexible screens, and I don't get the feeling that there's a lot of desire for that, because number one, I guarantee they can't take as much of a beating as we can supply. You know, think about what we do with a piece of paper on a regular basis. And you want to submit an OLED screen to that same list until you can crease one and, you know, fold it over on itself 7 times and have it still function without any creases, I think that you're or have them be completely disposable, so cheap that they're just it's dumb. The cool thing that you can do with them, and what I like that you can do with them, is that you can embed them into different shapes. You know, you can really do unique screen surfaces, which there might be a market for that, but I'm not sure what that market is, and I'm not sure who could, you know, who's going to do what with it. But I think at this point, it's like, We until somebody really comes up with an idea that requires a very flexible screen, A, or B, a permanently contorted screen where there's a real advantage to it, I don't think that you're going to sell very many of these. And maybe somebody out there has a cool idea that's like, it's just going to blow my mind. But it's all of our thinking and all of our creativity for the past, you know, when was TV invented? Early, you know,
a while ago.
It's weird. I have no idea when TV was invented. Well, really and truly, but since projection was invented, so you're projecting onto a screen. So really the advent of cinema over 100 years ago, everything has been on flat static screens. And as they got smaller and more mobile, they all stayed on flat static screens. And they just became, the more mobile they became harder because that's where the technology was, you know, it's easy to make something that's not flexible, but all of our creativity, all of our content, all of our thought processes are based on flat screens. And so until you get somebody, and I think that means that it's absolutely right for somebody to just make a killing. But you got to find the person that has an idea that requires it. You're not going to sell very many of them if somebody builds unique statues that look cool because they have an embedded flexible screen on them. That just using it isn't going to be unique enough to pump them out there. What you need is somebody with an idea already. Somebody who goes.
Well, it was the example I think of is Walt Disney with the Steam Willy cartoon, where not only was that the first cartoon to use sound effects, but they said that without sound, the cartoon made zero sense. It was a requirement to understand what was going on in the cartoon.
Exactly.
And they were like, and they were intertwined because there had been tons of cartoons where there's music on top, so you weren't just like sitting in a, you know, in a very quiet stadium listening to people chew habaneros. but this was the first one where, the sound meshed up and it was integral to the movie. And that's what you're talking about here. It's one thing to be like, oh yeah, we have a screen that's only made it flexible. It's another to be like, this would not make any sense unless it was flexible.
Yeah,
and you couldn't imagine any other way to do this.
And until you do that, you're not going to sell a lot of them. But the moment you do, you're going to sell a ton of them. And
okay, all right. Thinking caps on, man. What's a case where you're like, yeah, this has to be flexible, otherwise it makes no sense? What would be something like that?
What if you
could make, like, screens that vibrated, which is a type of flexibility? Like, almost like stereo speakers. That'd be interesting.
A piezomatic surface? Yeah, that's out there. You have, what they are is they're like plastic membranes. You put a pulse to, and when you pulse it, it flexes and creates a vibration. So you can make these super flat speakers. So that's not an absurd idea. If you could embed that into a screen, so it's one and the same. But I still would ask the question of, what would you do with that? Would you just hold that in your hands and read it like a newspaper? Or, you know, it's not saying that that's not a good idea in that, or that wouldn't be incorporated into something else. But I'm trying to think of, like, you know,
wearable tech. That's where watches and stuff.
Yeah, and maybe that is the answer. Is wearable is watches,
socks.
But socks, yeah. But I still wonder, like, what it's Apple's iWatch will certainly use OLED because it will be a curved surface across the wrist, almost certainly, and OLED is way more energy efficient. So it doesn't make sense for them to not use an OLED type screen, to use this exact technology in order to build an iWatch and give you the perks of that. That being said, okay, that's one use case, and that will help the industry. But you're still not talking about something that's integral. You're talking about something that's stylistic. It's a statue that has a screen on it. It doesn't change how it works. It just changes how it looks. And until you can change how it works, and I still think anybody who thinks that they're going to have a flexible screen that they pull out of a scroll and use that as a phone is just, they don't understand what they're talking about. They haven't actually thought about the functionality and the day-to-day abuse that we put our mobile screens through in the form of our phones. I just don't think anything would survive that. We're talking about way more mechanical parts, and the simple truth is that mechanical things fail. That's where the biggest failures on devices occur. Cracked screens, broken buttons, And so now you're going to introduce an entire new gamut of mechanical components, things that can roll up and spring back, and not to mention a flexible screen that I guarantee you can break and doesn't have the support of the rest of the aluminum or plastic to keep it taut and protected. I don't know. Just like I can't think of, you know, and I can't understand why that's such a great innovation over the modern screen, except that it can roll up and be smaller. But how much smaller do cell phones need to get? You know, that's the real thing.
Maybe the idea is the cell phone body stays the same size, but now you can fold it out to an iPad sheet of paper.
Yeah, maybe. But I think one of the big advantages of the iPad is that you can hold one corner of it, especially the iPad minis, you can hold one corner of it and have this surface that's static and holds the screen, because all of our content is designed to be looked at as a flat, static screen. So you'd have to come up with new content and a new way of interacting with it, because you're not going to put the thing down on a table like we're a piece of paper all the time. You know, I wonder, I don't know. I'm sure they've thought through all this stuff, but I just keep getting the feeling that they haven't thought through it. They keep hoping that if you build it, they will come. Build the technology, the ideas that
you got the dreams. We just need the field.
Right, so, I don't know.
Okay. All right. Well, Q4. They're going to make 12,000 of them a month.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, we will. I'd be glad to be proven wrong on this. I'm never glad to be proven wrong, actually, but I think it would be cool if we found this. I hope somebody does figure it out, and I hope they figure it out soon. I just don't think they will. So kind of going back to our talk on fingerprints, my idea and the reason why I keep using the word fingerprints is because somebody else out in the world is already using this to some degree, this concept. So cookies has been like the long-term tool for tracking your computer. Essentially, it's a, if you're, I'm sure everybody on this that listens to us is familiar, but
something you eat, they're delicious, chocolate chips are the best.
Yeah. Give me more cookies because I'm the cookie monster. Your cookies are basically a little piece of script that is embedded into your, that your browser keeps track of, that lets you know where you are on, you know, that basically if you go to a website, the website can give a cookie, and it's basically like a little piece of information that has like your user ID, if you're logged in or not, stuff like that. And it's kind of how they keep track of login information. It's how they keep track of all sorts of stuff. It really was used to be, it's supposed to be used individually for that one website. But a couple of companies have come up with ideas of how to build these super cookies, Facebook being one of the prime offenders of this idea.
Yeah, DoubleClick is the other one, which is now owned by Google.
It's this idea of being able to build these cookies that will be an identifier of your browser and your computer to many, many websites, allowing them to track you across the internet. It gives them a lot more information about what you're doing and how you're doing it, and then the NSA is able to look at that as well because they have access to everything. Well, except the NSA doesn't really need to. They can, the whole PRISM thing, and they're tearing off the, that's besides the point. Google and Facebook are your big dudes right now that are doing that. One of the big movements in browser technology is to get away from the cookies. Like, what's it called? Firefox is constantly in debate about whether or not they want to make cookies default off.
And it's third party cookies.
Right.
First party, fine, no big deal. They understand there's a, you know, makes a ton of sense really well. But it's the third party ones like Facebook and DoubleClick where, you know, they're third party.
Right. And this would affect advertisers the most. And so advertisers hate this idea. There's a sudden change of currents in the industry because they basically decided that they're not really necessary. It is easier and actually more efficient to identify computers and users based on a unique set of features of your browser and your computer configuration. A little piece of JavaScript basically goes in a system dump of all the different features. They store all that information, and the next time you come back to the website or every time you go to some other website, they basically do the same diagnostic. Like, and they look at things like fonts and different operating system and different things that are working in the background of your system, and they basically take all that information, they create a unique fingerprint of your device, and every time you kick around to another site, they keep track of that fingerprint. And since it's a little piece of JavaScript that anybody can embed into their stuff, Google will assuredly put that into their data tracker, which anybody who is serious at all about their website embeds that little piece of code in their in their website, so they can go back and see who's going to the website and when they're going to it. Which, you know, full disclosure, furloughbros.com does that. Check it out; it's a great site. But it allows us to keep track of how many visitors we get, unique visitors, residence time and stuff. And now I'm sure it also gives Google all sorts of information about where your computer is. And don't blame us. Everybody on the internet does it. This has become the next big thing. And the other crazy part about it is though, like a lot of people have been like, well, I'll just change my system configuration up. But, like, the problem is that this is like 98% of computers are unique. And if they are able to like track over time how systems change. So to some degree, they know like what changes. And if they track a change, if they can tie an IP address, a computer together with a change, all that does is make your computer more identifiable over time. And it also starts to allow them to bridge identities of computers across different operating systems and different especially different browsers and stuff, because they can start to put together what browsers are being used on what computers. And the other thing is that most mobile phones, specifically Apple, they reject most third-party cookies. They use a different system for really keeping track of all of that, which it's funny. I'm actually not that familiar with it. I'm believing the article on that. But
well, I know Apple rejects them for sure. So
right.
I'm surprised they use another system. Right. I'm sitting here, and I guess this is probably true because there's a ton of money on the table for it. But like, I know the stuff that HP does in order to track users and, you know, of all sorts of products.
Right.
I mean, and that's a huge, huge data problem. And so you start talking about how they can pool computers together. I don't know. I guess you get a super smart engineer who can create those algorithms to start to bundle them together. But that's just...
It seems like a mess. It seems difficult.
Yeah, it sounds like, yeah, maybe someday in the future, but... Jeez, that's a lot of unstructured data that you're pulling together or trying to make sense out of. But I don't know, that's the hope and dream, I guess. But it just sounds very unrealistic. Maybe they are, but they're not looking at you or me. They don't care. If anything, they're looking at the data at a very, very, very high aggregated level. I'd be shocked if they're trying to pull together different users and figure out what's
the use. They might be looking at a very small subset of users as kind of a proof of concept of can we do this? How would we do this? Because for most people, most of the time, your cookies work. Whereas like mobile users, since your cookies don't work on your mobile devices, you know, it might be that they're just looking at mobile devices or looking for identifiers, which is the other big thing that this talked about is that this would
work.
It's
easy for me because I log into Facebook and Google everywhere. So
I know. There's no guessing game for me when it comes to those two companies. They know what I do.
All know that I got ad blocks. So yeah.
Yeah, that's right, Forbes. Forbes
that's
is
right.
Awful. I accidentally looked at Forbes without ad block on.
What's that like?
It's unbelievable, man.
I noticed there's a whole like blank section on this right hand side column.
Yeah.
My guess is that's not true.
Yeah, it's sort of like Mac Daily News as well.
Oh my gosh. This guy's
every once in a while it's funny. When I install Adblock on other people's computers, it's because I jumped onto a Mac Daily News. Like, I can put up with using Twitter and Facebook and Pandora and all these other services, Reddit, without Adblock on, but Mac Daily News is the one that it's unforgivable. It's unforgivable. That is the ugliest site, and it's funny, I forget how ugly it is, because it looks really clean and nice without any ads.
Yeah. Well, and even their mobile one is just that one huge one at the top.
Oh, yeah.
Just gotta scroll fast until before the image loads.
Right.
Yeah, that's they are pretty
funny. They're so funny though. I love their just ridiculous criticisms. The best part to me is when they have a title where they're like, "Why Facebook is dead and some other garbage."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why Apple is supposedly doomed.
Yeah.
Comma supposedly.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
I love
yeah.
that. Their titles, man. They're another one. Their titles are just fun to read because they're so biased. They don't even.
Yeah.
They don't even try. You know, I mean, that's where they try to be like, how biased can we be in this post?
Yeah, that's the best part. Is it's so absurd, so absurd.
I love it. And then it's fun when they get a non Apple person on the comments. Oh. Just
get ripped apart. Why are you even here? You're in the wrong part of town, dude.
It was fun. What was the one too? It was like Bill Gates retired. It was like his last day, and everyone was doing all these like mementos and you know, saying nice words about him and everything. And they were just like, "Bill Gates is a jerk. We hate him."
Right?
Like, would you expect something different?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, That's so funny. It's Mac Daily News. Come on now.
The end of the tyranny, finally.
Yeah, exactly.
May Balmer live forever.
Yeah. Balmer, the Balmer toast is great. May Ballmer remain CEO for as long as it takes.
Oh man. They're good. Rumor mill is they might be going through some huge restructuring.
Who?
Yeah, that goes.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, we'll see.
Hopefully it's all right. I get almost all of my Apple news out of them too. I mean, they're just such a big net. They catch any board.
No excuses. You're an Apple fanboy. It's okay. Me too.
Well,
that's why I read it. It's entertaining.
Yeah, it is very entertaining. But
I like the ones where I had already read the article somewhere else.
Yeah.
And then you see their interpretation of the article and the title. You're just like, yes. So biased.
I love it.
That's awesome.
So funny.
They hate Dvorak too, which I think he's
Dvorak.
But they hate him.
They look at every opportunity to tear him apart.
I love it. They just have certain people. They hate him. And who's the other guy? He's the analyst that they eviscerate every time. But I don't remember. But the guy hates Apple, so they hate him.
And right.
I don't even think he knows they exist, which is the funny
part. Yeah, that's the best part.
He's just
the little nipping dog at the ankle. What are you doing?
What? You're driving traffic my way? Or even though they're like, be careful before you click.
Right, yeah, think before you click.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. They're so biased. Oh, it's funny.
Yeah.
I hope we're like that. Okay, you get one more.
One more. So, Project Loon, I'm reading more and more about it because I think it's amazing and I want to become part of their team, work for Google as part of the Loon team. But what's interesting is, you know, people are now starting to actually like think about what this is going to be like and how it's all going to work. And one of the problems is that this is like a giant geopolitical nightmare because there's a couple of different things that are going on. Number one, these things, because of how they work, the main satellites, or the main, I call them satellites, they're not technically satellites, the main blimps are going to traverse the globe. They're not going to be geosync with whatever location they're over. So as the Earth turns below them, they're not necessarily going to keep up. They will to some degree just because of wind currents and stuff. But they're, you know, for the most part, they're going to move around the world. So a few weird things that go on is that, like, they're talking about the fact that it just so happens that Iran and Texas have the same latitude. So the same blimp over the course of the Earth's rotation will service Texas and Iran, which Texas and or Iran might not be totally cool with as travels over. So they got stuff like that they have to deal with, and that's going on. They were talking about stuff of like the fact that, you know, bandwidth and spectrum is super highly regulated in most developed countries because there's frankly not enough. But one of the big issues that you come up with is like the bandwidth or the spectrum in the U.S. is different than this spectrum in the U.K., which is different than the spectrum in China, or how it's regulated. So they're talking about one of the big problems will be trying to build blimps that have these universal spectrum things. So as you move into as you move into different zones where you have to operate in different parts of the spectrum, either A, there's the licensing nightmare of trying to license it, or just being able to operate in different parts of the unlicensed spectrum. And some of it will be, you know, some of the spectrum is going to be highly, you know, functional in this part of the spectrum because it's better for what they're doing. And it's open, so that'll be great in some countries, but in other countries it'll be this part of the spectrum that it'll be best for the function will be closed or already purchased or whatever. So they're talking about just different things that are going on with this with Loon. There's also the issue of the fact that Google is essentially becoming a global ISP, which there aren't very many of those. They might number in the zeros. An internet service provider that functions effectively around the world, around the globe, has never really been done before on this kind of scale. And so that's its own you know, nightmare of different things that are of different issues that they have to work around, and they're going to have to deal with.
So do you think they'll actually stand a chance beyond just pure research? I mean, you're listing off some very, very big hurdles.
So this article actually was really interesting because they were talking about how these are huge hurdles, but they did talk about the fact that there is precedence for a system sort of like this already working. You're like, okay, point it out. And they're like, well, just go a few more miles out into space and you have the network. Now, it's a little bit different because the satellite network is in clearly international space.
Right.
And it's a little more, you know, cowboys and Indians up in space, where it's, you know, we don't shoot down their satellites because they don't shoot down our satellites, and there's a bunch of space debris up there. So if you can survive, good luck. You know, it's just sort of, and there's a lot more space. So we do have a system by which this all works. And the reality is that the satellite system is pumping spectrum into and out of the atmosphere all the time. They are operating in a spectrum that could interfere with ours. And so what they're basically saying is that yeah, as much of a nightmare as it is, we've already got a system for dealing with that, and that is in the satellites. The biggest difference is that the satellite spectrum came first, really and truly. I mean, you got your earliest radio waves in the form of radio, but really about the time that TV was taken off, satellites are going into orbit. Your early Sputniks and GPS satellites are getting thrown up into the atmosphere, and then communication satellites came relatively soon after that. So it's, you know, there was a lot more spectrum, and they kind of got to cut out their territory early on. So it was a little less of a nightmare to deal with. But they're basically like, you know, different countries have figured out how to deal with this. The biggest problem, and the weirdest part about this, is that a lot of most early satellites, and almost exclusively, were state actors. So it was different politicians and different diplomats dealing with other countries saying, hey, we're going to put a satellite up over your atmosphere. And the other country said, we don't like that. And we'd say, well, shoot it down then. And they go, we can't. And they go, that's my point. So, you know, it was a it's a little bit of a different situation in that there was – where they couldn't form cooperation, the other country couldn't do anything about it. But nowadays, you got, you know, there is a lot of cooperation in there. Whereas Google's a non-state actor; it's a
that's true, huh?
Or it's a non-governmental organization; it's an NGO, and which is not really what it's been in its entire history. And so this will be its first stage, or its first real step into international politics as an NGO. And there's a lot of precedence for how different countries deal with different NGOs. And what they're doing isn't necessarily crazy or unique in that they want to bring telecommunications on the cheap to different countries. The weird part about it is that these things will pass all over the world. And so they're talking about the fact that that's one of the undercurrents of Project Loon that Google doesn't really talk about, but it's going to become a huge part of the whole project, is going to be their interactions with the UN and becoming a full-blown sanctioned NGO, you know, at least from, you know, as an American NGO, and really, you know, something that the UN deals with on a big level. Having to get into the whole mess. So, you know, the technological part, actually, they're talking about, that's the easy part. That's the fun part. You can do a bunch of research. You can figure out how you do it. The real trick is going to be, who are the politicians, who are the lobbyists that they hire to go in and sweet talk all the diplomats at the UN to allow them to do this. But
same people trying to let them drive cars without drivers.
Yeah, probably. It's a different game, though. To me, that's, I've always thought international politics are way more fun than domestic politics. Domestic politics are annoying, stupid, and petty. International politics are exciting, fun, and warty. so you know, it's okay. To me, that makes me want to be part of that Project Loon team even more, because it's just that much more rough and tumble. 235 or 36 or whatever the number is, independent actors acting all within a fleet. What's the way of putting it that I've heard before? That's really cool. It's 235. Great. What's the word I'm looking for? When you're 235 sovereign individuals acting within a completely governmentless system, you know, total anarchy. That's essentially what you have in the country region. You know, there is no government over them, so there are no rules. And the only rules that are the rules that we agree to, and since we're the biggest dogs in the entire world, the only rules that we care about are the ones that help us. You know, why do we have a massive drone program all over the world where we take people out in countries that aren't ours? Because nobody else can yet. The moment anybody else does, we're going to be really in support of some hard regulation through the UN and treaties on what really and truly should we be allowing countries. And we're not pointing at any people, we're not naming any names, but should we allow countries to just fly into other countries and blow them up? And China's going to be like, dude, what have you been doing for the last 10 years, you jerks? Like, now that we're doing it, you're upset? What the heck? So, interesting. It's interesting. It's really, I'm looking forward to watching this one over the next couple of years and seeing as they change the world.
They're going to try.
Yeah.
I know that about it. I'm on my landline. I don't have to depend on a balloon.
Yeah.
But those are some interesting problems. You know, it's one thing to tackle technical. It's another to, you got to tack on policy as well. But, you know, that's the point of some of the projects.
Right.
It's interesting. You know, you see a trend where it seems like every single project from Google X involves some sort of new legislation hurdle at the same time.
Right.
You know, it's privacy concerns, driving list car concerns, and now spectrum concerns. They're pushing the envelope.
That's right. Cool. Right. Yeah, it's cool. It's very cool. I like it a lot.
That is awesome. Well, dude, it is that time.
All right.
When you must start packing for the UK. No, you don't. You said you're leaving Saturday?
Yeah, Saturday morning.
And you're going to be in London itself?
I'm actually flying into Heathrow, but I'm going to be in Lincoln for the week, which is about four hours north of London. It's a uni town, and I will be there for the 4th of July, so I have this obscene... not obscene, but just absurd.
Intense.
American flag shirt, button-up shirt that I bought.
Gosh.
That I'm gonna wear on the 4th and go drinking at all the pubs. Should be done with my work by then too. So if I show up over on Friday, no one will complain. I'm really, really, really excited.
So you're taking off Saturday. When are you expected to get back?
I fly.
Just so if everyone wants to rob you, they know their window.
Yes. Saturday morning, I come back and I fly out of Heathrow, and I'll be back by Saturday night here in San Francisco, probably like a little.
So you're saying next Sunday's podcast is at risk, but the one after that, you're good to go.
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to do my best to
be in town.
Yeah. Dude, you know what I do. I'll get one of those 16-ounce Red Bulls.
yeah. So we'll just have to. So next week's podcast timing might be, we'll have to figure that out.
Yeah.
Whether or not it's you or someone else. Because I think it'd be cool if you can get an internet connection. That'd be cool to, you know, and I'm game with different times. So
yeah,
we'll coordinate. We'll do some international math to figure out time zones.
Nice. Sounds fun.
Makes sense. Cool beans, man. Hey,
cool beans.
Good show.
You too.
Good talk all around. Everyone else, thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow. My newly transplanted brother is Matthew Furlow. We'll talk next time.
Thank you.